who's the most terrible of them all? It's Hollywood Lynn.
Hello and welcome to Everyone is Terrible. I'm your host, Hollywood Lynn. It's my favorite day of the week. Welcome to the podcast where we discuss all the terrible things and people we see on TV. Today's guest, you've seen him in the background, groping Joe Gorga, probably. It's publicist to The Real Housewives, Anthony Lario.
Lynn, it's so fabulous being here with you. I was really looking forward to this, I'm not going to lie.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, because I feel like you've been like a gay mentor for me.
Oh.
And so whenever you tell me something, whether it's media-wise or whatever, to check out, I trust your opinion more than some other people.
You know why? It's because we're talking about women in media today, and I wanted to have Anthony on because this is like, you know, he's a fresh kid. This is a new perspective, you guys. You know, we've seen how the media has treated women in the 90s. I was a big Pamela Anderson fan.
I'm 27, but I do feel
27 and a half.
And a half. I feel like my first introduction to her was when I was in third grade, and I remember watching Scary Movie 3. And she was in the opening scene in the Ring parody.
Yeah.
And I didn't know who she was. I remember asking my parents who she was, and they actually said that she was a porn star. And that's she's not a porn star.
I think what we're going to talk about today is like all the ugly side to it. But this was an invasion of privacy. This was something stolen. It was stolen property. So we're going to get into the semantics of it. We're going to get into all the good stuff, but let's start with some terrible TV recommendations. You know, Real Housewives of Miami is on Peacock exclusively, and it's been on for a minute. Like, you know, everyone's been yelling at me to go watch it, and I just, like, you know, said, guys, I'm not really in the Housewives mood, and I'm good.
I get that feeling.
But too. You guys, but I actually watched it, and I'm obsessed with Real Housewives of Miami. Like, this is what we signed up to see in the first place, which was opulence and, like, fabulousness and, like, untouchable wealth. And, like, we have that, but we also see the dirty side of it. Go see that. If you want to be in a tornado of Real Housewives and see the same storyline spiraling over and over again, then check out Real Housewives of New Jersey. It's back. Sorry, Anthony. I know you are close to the Jersey women, but like you have to admit, we've seen this before. I don't know. Where do we go from here?
I think that we're going to get some really cool new dynamics too with the three new ladies.
Yes, there's three new housewives, which does help.
Yes, and they're all like very authentically New Jersey and authentically connected to the women already on the show. Even though there will always be this Teresa, Melissa, Joey dynamic going on, I think it's okay because we have these new people. And Teresa's the kind of person where she can parrot and mimic back something that is fed to her, I feel like. You know, familial trauma and generational trauma. I think that she can read it and be like, yeah, that makes sense. But the implementation of that.
I say this all the time to people in general. We have to break the cycle. And I feel like Teresa's kind of in that same boat too. It's like she grew up so old school Italian. It's like, don't you want to break that? Like there is beautifulness to having like a big family and loyalty. But it's like if you're a fucking bad person, I don't care if you're family. I don't want you around. Like I create my own family. As RuPaul said, as gay people, we get to choose our family. We get to choose.
Yeah, it's true. And luckily for Pam Anderson's family, I do feel like her two sons have done a successful job of breaking some sort of familial cycle, generational trauma.
I love them.
Yeah, I love her kids. Not only are they gorgeous, but they seem really smart and on the right side of history with a lot of things.
Yeah, the boys are super protective of their mother. You know, they are producing this documentary where everyone else has told her story but her. So now it's time for her to tell her story. And I love that her boys love her and that they're so supportive and that they're like, you know what? No, we have to tell your story. Like people would be shocked that you're like the biggest star in the world and you have no money. Or you like made $4,000 on Baywatch. Like it's unheard of. It's crazy. Like, I don't know. I feel like we're going to really kind of open up this Hollywood wound, and there's a lot of terrible people. Like, even all the talk show hosts that we all grew up loving, like, they're all kind of assholes. All of them. Like, all of them.
Yeah, and I'm glad we're living in a time people like, you know, Amy Winehouse or Marilyn Monroe or Anna Nicole Smith and these kind of amazing women who were ridiculed in their lifetime, who we now revere as like icon. Like, it's not just about the crack pipe. It's not just about washing the penis. It's poetic in a way.
I totally agree. I love that. Have you ever washed your penis in the sink before?
I haven't washed my penis in the sink, but I have peed in the sink.
Well, I've peed in the sink, but I've also washed my penis in the sink. But it wasn't because, like, I was trying to hide that I was cheating. It's because, like, I was – it's called a hoe bath.
Oh, yeah. That's – I do a hoe bath sometimes. So I do with a rag.
You're like, well, I wasn't planning on having sex, but now I'm going to, so I need a hoe bath real quick.
Oh, yeah. My mom always calls it a Sicilian shower. Like the people in Sicily, like the Nona and Poppy and with the kids, it's like nobody feels like taking an actual bath. So you do a bunch of Versace cologne and wash the cooch and the butt.
Ew, that's disgusting. Let's get into this. Pamela, a love story. It's on Netflix. It's so good, you guys. It just reveals a whole different side to her. Let's start with how the documentary is presented. It's narration style, basically words from her journal. Let's start with people who journal in general. Mm-hmm. I think it's kind of weird. I've never personally journaled, only because, like, even like one of my theories on journaling, she kind of talked about herself. She said, sometimes I was writing for evidence, like just in case somebody found this. And then, like, sometimes I was really expressing my true feelings. And I'm like, that I have kind of a problem with, because the whole theory behind the journal is it's a journal. Why would she lie? Like, that's the whole point of a fucking journal. But then she also said, like, she did it because, you know, she was scared for her life at some point, and it was all for, like, evidence and stuff. So, like, I don't know. It's weird for me, the journal writing thing, because it's, like, 30 years later, how do you know what's, like, what's authentic and, like, what was just exacerbated by the situation you were in or anything?
Like, I'm just like you. Like, I feel like we do our journaling in other ways, whether it's podcasting or going to therapy, like that's our journaling. But I work with a psychotherapist right now who really talks about journaling, and she's not trying to sell journals or make money off journaling, but she's like, when you write something down, it's a bird's eye view. It's like putting yourself onto something that you can separate. And even if years back, you look and you say, this was exacerbated in some way, that's okay. That's the point of it. It's so you can get it down on that paper and disconnect from it. A little bit like you, in the way where I might journal, but I'm so creative that I feel like maybe it's not really authentic. Like, I feel like I kind of want to write a book lying to your therapist. Like, when you talk to somebody, it's like, how can you really get your true feelings out there without any influential creative factor or embellishment factor or something? It's very hard for me, but I want to start trying to do that type of journaling where you just kind of close your eyes, you write down, and then you
free association.
Yeah.
You know what? I think you kind of hit it on the head. It's like we all do it in our own ways. And I just remember back in the 90s, I think it was like a camcorder thing or like a 90s thing. But like I filmed everything as well. Oh my! I used to film everything back in the day, just like Pamela, just like she did. Like just lift the camera up. Hi, say hi. What are we doing? Like, where are we at? Like I used to do all of that. So in a sense, it's journaling in a way as well. But with the documentary, it's a little bit of both. There's just like all these home videos, but it's also narrated by her. You know, she had a really hard life. She was molested by her female babysitter. And then she grew up with like this child guilt kind of thing, because like when you're sexually molested, it's like you always think it's your fault. But then she kind of turned it into anger, and like she told her babysitter, like, I hope you die, like I hate you. And then she died the next day, which is like fucking crazy. Yeah. So it's like to deal with that as a child, it's fucked up. Like
the thing that she was focusing on that I found so interesting was her guilt of just saying, like, I hope you die. And then she died the next day. Like, that's just happens to be cataclysmic. Like, because while watching it, I disagreed with her on a lot of her life mottos and a lot of her life things, but I still love her and found her very endearing. And everybody's coping mechanisms are different. But I, yeah. I did disagree with her on a lot of her kind of mantras.
Well, she is very like, you know, I'm letting you know right now, I don't need you. Like, one thing, I'm out. And it's like, now you're alone in your 50s, like, because, you know, you gave everything up. And it's like, what happened to working on things, working it out? But in a sense, I'm not mad at it. Does that make sense? It's like, you're not settling for anything. But I understand what you're saying. Like, I don't fully agree with that. Like, if I were to leave every time I had a fucking problem.
Yeah. Yeah, she's so much about protecting her peace to the point where the things that she might do to protect her peace might be the thing that causes more distress later on.
Yeah, I just love how it happened for her so quickly. Just, I guess she didn't get the struggle like everybody else, but everybody's journey is different. You know, I didn't show up to Hollywood with these big fucking boobs at 18 going, all right, I'm here to pose for Playboy. So everyone's journey is different. Yeah. But it was a very, in my opinion, like, wham, bam, thank you, ma'am. Like, it's just like, let's get you in there. But I think she was meant to be famous. Like, you know, how do you miss your Baywatch audition 11 times and still get it? That means like you were meant to be on that fucking show.
What was your like first, because I told you mine was Scary Movie 3 was my first introduction to her. What was your first thing that you saw her and you were like, whoa, who is this?
It was Baywatch, and it wasn't because I watched Baywatch. Like, obviously, I was too young to, like, watch Baywatch and understand it, but it was always on. Like, just like, you know, you turn on the TV now, and there's always something rerunning and playing. That's what Baywatch was. It was just always on, and I thought it was cheesy as hell.
Did you ever see the tape?
I did see the tape. I did. It was interesting because I didn't see it, obviously, like, when it came out. This was 1996, you know what I mean? So I did not watch it. I watched it around the 2000s, like when I was in high school and we had LimeWire and you can download videos. So we'd be like, I'm downloading the Pam and Tommy like porn. If I don't lose connection, I should have it downloaded by Sunday.
Also, I just Googled the sex tape. Look at this Tommy Lee's schlong.
I know. His dick is huge.
It's very big.
It's huge. Bob Ritchie.
Oh, well, from I know him for two things. The song Picture with Sheryl Crow. I'm and dead. Then also he's just like a wild QAnoner right now. Yeah.
My name is Kid Rock. Oh my God. It was like the song of the 90s. Like, it was kind of annoying, but like, if we're going to talk about musicals, like, Picture was probably one of his best repertoire. Like, everything else is like super cheesy, super 90s. The Men of Pamela Anderson, Kelly Slater, like, such a world renowned hot surfer and like, she was with Rick Solomon, which was kind of crazy because they didn't mention this in the documentary, but it's like she like catapulted to this new entire kind of fame thing with the sex tape, but she didn't benefit anything from it, like Paris Hilton or like Kim Kardashian or any of those bitches. But what was interesting was like the man she dated, Rick Solomon, he ended up being in the Paris Hilton sex tape 9 years later.
Yeah.
So it's crazy to like, here I am with this woman who that someone stole her sex tape with her former husband or whatever. And then he goes on to make his own tape like 9 years later that would go viral in a sense with One Night in Paris.
And listen, it's like when you think about the sex tape, it's always the woman with like the Kim Kardashian sex tape, the Pam Anderson sex tape, the Paris Hilton sex tape. Who never, like, and there are famous men in them, but we don't say their names when it comes to sex tape.
It's so true. Why do we do that?
I don't know. I mean, we as gay men even just still say the whatever sex tape. I just looked up Rick Solomon because I forgot what he looked like. And I'm like, he's hot. I would be calling it the Rick Solomon sex tape.
I don't know if he's hot. He has a big old freaking penis. That's different. But he has a humongous penis. He was like ripping Paris Hilton open in that tape. I've seen all those celebrity sex tapes. Let's just get that out of the way. I've seen all the celebrity sex tape. Pam Anderson, Paris. I've seen Kim Kardashian with Ray J.
Too. That's one of a favorite of mine because she's pretty
well,
funny.
Well, she's on Ecstasy.
Yeah.
Speaking of, like, what do you think about the documentary? How she just very lightly was like, yeah, the night that I hung out with Tommy in Cancun, like, he put Ecstasy in my champagne. And, like, I had never done it before. So that was all a blur and interesting. And then 4 days later, we were married. And it's like very nonchalant. Like basically, he drugged you.
That was the vibe of all of it, was that, like, so nonchalant and so, like, the crack pipe in the Christmas tree.
I'm dead.
Just like, yeah, well, who else's crack pipe would it have been in the Christmas tree? Like,
I know. It's like you're just casually telling in the world that Rick Solomon does crack. Perfect.
Yeah. And she just has so many stories like this.
But as a person, I like her view. Like, I like what she stands for. I like that, you know, she endured so much suffering just for other people or for the better outcome of situations. Like, mm-hmm. She sat through that roast. Like, we all know the roast on Comedy Central. They're fucking brutal.
What did you think of that? I was like,
well, she did it under the circumstance that they would pay PETA $200,000.
Yes. Yeah.
It's that's amazing. That's amazing because she has to personally fucking deal with the whole hour of them roasting her, talking shit about her, calling her a whore. I just love like her outlook on life. I love that when she landed, she called her mom and she landed on Gay Pride Day. Yeah. So she was like, gay people exist. And like, not only do they exist, but they like hold hands and like are handcuffed together walking down the street. Mm-hmm. Her mom's like, oh my God, you've made it. It's like, I love that.
Totally.
I just love that she's like, no, I love animals. I love gay people. Like, I've always taken a backseat to, like, my trauma, the humor, like, my finances. And it's like, it's her time now. That's why I was really happy that the way they shaped this was like, let me tell you about what happened to her. Now let me tell you where she's at now and, like, what's coming. And do we know what's coming? We don't. But we know what's coming. Her fucking time. Her money and her side of the story. And, like, here comes Broadway. And I just thought that was beautiful. You know?
Oh my God. So beautiful. And I was so lucky to be able to see her as Roxy Hart on her final performance. It was her last.
Oh, shut up. You saw it on the final day?
I did. First of all, I was so worried because Dave Quinn had told me that that she was like notorious for calling out, that like she missed like a bunch of performances. And that usually happens with you know, people who are stunt casted, for lack of a better phrase, because I don't think because they're being divas. I think it's because it's fucking hard to do.
It's eight shows a week.
Yeah, eight shows a week. Like it's.
I used to do six shows a week, and that was fucking hard in Vegas when I was doing professional theater. We used to do six shows a week.
And you had to be trained to do that. Like you, it's not just like you can learn to do that in 4 weeks or whatever she had to learn the role, but she got all her kinks out. She showed up and she was ready. And what was, you could tell that she definitely treated the cast amazingly because they were so, and I've seen that before with other people in the cameo, Roxy Hart. They just took to her so well. And even the woman who played Velma, you know, which is like a belty type role, when they were doing their final number together and they sing in unison, no harmonies, just the same melody. She altered her voice to match.
I love Pam's that.
Kind of dainty Marilyn Monroe.
Yeah. Very flirty, very talky, but it's like what works for her. Like the Broadway people know that, you know, she doesn't have this big voice. So it's like, let us accommodate you. Let us nurture you. And I love that the other people stepped up to that. That's amazing.
Yeah, they really did. And, she actually, and you know this as a singer, like you can be taught to sing, but certain things come natural, like pitch.
And with those nerves and the house being so fucking quiet on Broadway, in her little Marilyn talkie voice, it's so easy to squeak. It's so easy to just like, I was actually really impressed. And the dancing, like she was really getting into that Fosse. I'm like, go girl.
She was a great dancer and her comedic timing was so good. And she ad-libbed a few things and she was great. And I think that the best song that she did, I mean, obviously the Roxy number was great, but it was my, that Funny Honey of Mine. Mm. When she performed that, the crowd went wild. I mean, and she just took vocal liberties too, that I'd be like, she did an opt up there. Like, you know, something really cool that you can tell that she had to just learned what an opt up is. And she did it. And she was impressed with herself. You could tell at times.
Yeah.
Which is cool.
I think she's great. I love that in the documentary, they're like, don't you wish you would have settled like for the money? Like, don't you wish you would have signed? And it's like, I don't think that she could ever feel comfortable signing, because I really do believe that that miscarriage happened because of all the stress she was going through.
Yeah.
Like stress will kill your body. It will bring disease. It will bring cancer. It is the invisible killer. Stress will just destroy your life. So I really do believe that that had a contributing factor to her miscarriage. And so when she was going through those depots during the second time, she was just like, I'm not doing this again. Like, I'm not going to lose my child over this. Like, I'm done. Leave me alone. And it's like,
yeah,
that really should resonate with us, because we haven't fucking learned a thing since. Like, we still chase people down the street. We still fucking stalk celebrities. Like, and it's just, it's so ridiculous. It's like, it's just like, we need to learn. We need to change the narrative. And we need to just change the way we treat people that are in the spotlight.
I agree.
To me, she's just like a normal girl, you know? She's so normal. She's from a small town in Canada. Like, her parents fought. She was an alcoholic. And she's like, I don't want to do anything like that. I don't want to be my mom. Like, I don't want to settle for the guy and be with him just because he's like the one guy in town. So just like, I don't know. It was just really refreshing to hear things that like normal people would say, like, yeah, I have this boyfriend and I caught him washing his dick in the sink. I'm pretty sure he's cheating on me.
That's how you know he's cheating. There's two favorite quotes of hers in the documentary. But the first one was when she said, I try to go around thinking I don't care what people think about me, but I cared enough. And that's why I am where I am now, because I cared enough. And I think that's so true. It's that fine line between, you know, and she contradicted herself sometimes, which is like endearing. And I guess whatever motto she needs to say to protect her peace. But that was the most authentic, I think, was, you know, don't care what people think about you, but care just enough. And then I wrote the other one down. I don't overthink anything. Thinking is overrated. And that is just so true to like this kind of hypocrisy that she had going through her coping mechanisms. But then again, it's hers and it shows the individual. That's how she copes. You know, and that's how she survives.
And that's how she succeeds.
Yeah.
Can you imagine overthinking Roxy Hart because you have fucking 2 months to rehearse, and then like a month in, or like a week in New York, and then 8 shows for 2 months? It's like, it wasn't 2 months of rehearsal. It was a month of rehearsal. And then it was 2 months of show. So I don't know. I feel like that is the key to like succeeding, is like you can't overthink things. I have overthunk so many opportunities. I have overthunk relationships. I have overthunk conversations that now looking back, I'm like, if I would have just jumped into the water, like I would have realized I wasn't in the deep end. Does that make sense? It's like,
oh, it's so true. Oh, keep going.
I just think that we weren't hard enough on like, on the people that like really tripped her up on the way up. You know what I mean? Like, I think the way that all the talk show hosts treated her was disgusting.
Yeah.
You know, and we didn't even get into Tommy. Like, I think that he was really destructive in a sense. And like,
that's what I was going to ask you about, was Tommy. I wanted to know what you thought about the idea that how open she was with the idea of, and I think it's a really beautiful thing, kind of that acceptance that she'll never love anybody again. Like she loved him.
I think in that sense, it's like the ultimate love letter.
Yeah.
And it's beautiful. She's like, those are the father of my kids, and I'll always love him, even though I know it'll never work out. I think that's, once again, it's like that bravery that I admire about her, about putting it all out there. Totally. And I think that when you have kids with someone, there's just like a level of, it's permanent forever. So I think that's merely what she was saying. I think people ran with it a little too much.
Yeah, people were acting like she was like still in love with him. There's a big,
I know. I'm like, you guys, calm down. You don't need to contact Brittany Ferlin, who's now married to Tommy Lee, who, yeah, I used to do Glee with back in the day.
Her stupid TikTok that she made. That made me not like her. But then I was like, wait, I'm missing the whole point of the documentary, which is to not be like this towards women. Especially, you know, I'm missing the whole point.
Well, yeah, the media has treated women like crazy. But I do have a tweet from Young Kellis, and she says, Brittany Ferlin letting her remaining Vine followers know that she's okay amidst a documentary about Pamela Anderson's painful life story. I cannot imagine being that tone deaf and sensitive and out of touch.
Yeah.
There was just like things I saw on Twitter that they didn't mention in the documentary. Like, she mentioned doing like a cameo on Home Improvement. And then, yeah, I go on Twitter and it says that like Tim Allen flashed his penis allegedly to her. Was that in the documentary? Did I miss that?
No, I think that there was so much more too that on this press tour that she revealed. This press tour was unbelievable.
I know. She's like talking about stuff that I'm like, wait, that wasn't in there. Hold on. Yeah. What?
Well, and you know what I like about it? It gives some longevity to this, because you hope that, you know, something like this isn't the last that we see of her. Like, I want there to be more opportunities for her. I want her to work. I want her to, if she wants to, you know, yeah, like, yeah, and make her worth. You know, people, especially the gays, can be so crazy. And they're like, you know, I want her in the White Lotus. I'm like, maybe, like, okay, maybe not the White Lotus.
I saw that tweet and I'm like, what the, where'd you get that from? Like, what?
But something.
I get it, but I'm like, the girl who tweeted that was Tara. And I'm like, Tara, what the fuck does that have to do with Pamela Anderson? How do you, like, what? What? Where did you? But like, bitch, how about I'll be in the White Lotus? How about I'll be in the White Lotus, okay?
Yeah, how about you go to the White Lotus?
How about Albie fucks me in Sicily, please?
Yeah, we'll make that happen.
Maybe Mike White will call me and Pamela Anderson will be in White Lotus. What now, Tara?
Yeah, what now, Tara? You just gave them the amazing idea.
Anthony, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me. I always love talking to you. I think that you're one of the few people out there that really actually gets into the nitty gritty of things.
A Last of Us episode, the RuPaul's Drag Race. What else? Real Houses of Miami. Like, really good things. Some really nice blue check mark people coming in. I want to say thank you to everyone who just like literally dived right back in. Like, I put out a couple episodes. So I want to say thank you for welcoming me back, and thank you for diving in with me again. I know you have a lot of people to choose from. So thank you for coming back home. We appreciate you. Where it's terrible, and we'll always give it to you straight. Go give us 5 stars on Apple, please.
Nobody does terrible better than Leanne Castillo.
Yes, I love you guys, and we'll see you next time, terrible kids.
Who's the most terrible of them all? It's Hollywood Leanne.